everyone, and welcome to the Damage Report. And Friday, a chaotic Friday, madness behind the scenes. I'm somewhat John Iadarola. Brett Ehrlich joins us now. Brett, how's it going?
Hey, buddy. John's such a great sport. You wouldn't even notice that he had some things moved, like he got his bed moved.
No, that's not.
Are you okay?
I forgot multiple things from the studio and then had to run across the studio multiple times to go fetch things that I'd forgotten. You know, I forgot another thing, but I'm gonna use it as an opportunity to remind people that while Brett and I are gonna be discussing a lot of interesting news over the course of the next 90 minutes or so, we're gonna be closing out the week and the show the way that we always do, throwing away pieces of garbage. Our garbage people of the week, and I need to get our trashy to do that. So the garbage will be coming. I've got, I think, a pretty awesome video. I don't know who yours is, Brett. So I'm very excited to find that out. But you can find out as well by tuning in at the close of the show. And we got a lot that we're gonna be talking about. Please hit the like button if you haven't already. You can send us messages. We'll read as we go. Brett, anything we need to know about other programming on the TYT network before we launch into this thing?
So much happening. We'll probably mention this again before the show's over, but we just finished our final pre-launch run through of TYT's newest show, The Watch List. And it was an entire hour of J.R. Jackson and Wozni Lombre just covering everything from political news all the way up. Like, our producer was like, I don't have much for this story about this Tinder dater who just showed how crazy her match went after she didn't respond. And we talked about it for like 10 minutes and it was all fun and all great. So the watch list.
Is it about the West something?
No, it's just a woman who was like, I ignored this guy and here's the audio clips he sent me. And he was like, why don't you like me? Is it because I'm vegan and care too much about animals? It's like, no, it's
this behavior. That's probably what it is.
This is why that launches Monday, the 24th of January. You can watch it live at youtube.com/watchlisttyt. Definitely go there and subscribe, as well as facebook.com/watchlisttyt, all one word. And it also will be streaming Monday.
It will.
TYT's Twitch channel. So go check that out. And then tonight, for Game Busters, we're going to be playing a game called The Forest, which is a survival show, and you get to basically kill us. So there's that.
That's cool. Wait, they can get involved in this too?
Yeah, you can sabotage. We're gonna be Jordan's explaining, he's like, you have to make all these rudimentary tools and it's hard enough without people sabotaging you. So on Game Busters tonight at 5:30 PM Pacific, 8:30 PM Eastern, you can go to twitch.tv/TYT and sabotage our games.
Awesome, sounds like fun. Well, with that said, we have a job to do. Let's all get to it. This video.
It'll be a very, very strong case. And I know you won't accept it because of your hateful biases, but let's see if you can try thinking rational. The call for Joe Biden isn't, who was it called by? All the networks. Wow. All the networks. We have to forget about the law. Judges don't count. Come on, don't be ridiculous. Networks don't get to decide elections. Courts do.
So that was a little throwback for you, but with a point, because that was Rudy Giuliani, the personal lawyer of the former president, in charge of his legal case that he tried to make that he should remain president, continually reiterating that judges decide, courts matter, and the judges did decide in dozens of cases they failed. And that's why he's not president right now. But this is not, this story is not necessarily about the legal case. It's about doubling down on your mistakes. The first mistake is to put Rudy Giuliani in charge of your legal defense as you try to remain president. And then he fails. When you then put him in charge of your last ditch effort to remain president, which is the alternate electors plan, probably not a great idea. And that one failed too. The news today is that he was in fact apparently even more in charge of it than we had previously thought. We knew that this was going on. 7 different states, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin all tried to put together alternate slates of electors, which it doesn't mean anything. It's not real, but they believed it could help them to steal those states away from Joe Biden and make Trump president. We knew that Giuliani was meeting with those people, but no, internally, apparently, he was very much in charge. They were, as the Washington Post says, gathering in plain sight these electors, assisted by campaign officials and Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani actually is now being reported to have overseen the effort internally. These were not just a few meetings, these were not just a few phone calls. He was in charge of this. And that is according to former campaign officials and party leaders who, like some others interviewed by the Washington Post, spoke on the condition of anonymity. One of the people familiar with the plan said Giuliani was assisted at times by an anchor from the right-wing network One America News, who I haven't yet seen identified. And it's really a wonder that it failed. They had one of the weird news bots from OAN and Rudy Giuliani, Brett, and somehow Trump is not president today.
This is amazing on every single level. To rewatch that original video that you started out by showing, and his big, like Rudy Giuliani, the guy who slayed organized crime in New York City, was like rolling up his sleeves, being like, here comes round two, judgment day, where I nullify an election through like a systematic trial lawyer approach of me, the former wunderkind of RICO cases and organized crime. I'm gonna call the electoral process organized crime and take it down. And as fast as that happened, we then realized that we thought the most ridiculous thing was gonna be that he was in front of Four Seasons Total Landscaping. But at the end, we discovered that our man was actually going to lose an unprecedented amount of court cases. Like when he says the courts decide, yo, the courts did decide. And the court said, no, sir, and knocked him the hell down. And now all this extra things that we're learning about the way in which the Keystone cops fumbled every single bit of this is just nectar. Or it would be nectar and delicious if it weren't so horrifying in terms of what it might spell the next time around.
Yeah. And it leaves me with a question that I will ask, I don't know, America, I guess. I don't know, the audience, the justice system, the Democrats. So is this all just frowned upon? Is it not actually illegal? Is it really just frowned upon to try to overthrow an election? Like when we've heard that coups are bad our whole life, maybe we weren't asking specific enough questions about what aspect of a coup actually makes it illegal. Because we knew that they were involved, we knew that this was happening. Now we know that he was in charge, that it was an official thing that the Trump campaign was engaged in. And nobody seems to know for sure if they broke any laws in doing any of this. It's all just cool, I guess, that they were trying to nullify seven states' elections, disenfranchise tens of millions of Americans. And I guess it's a bad look, and that's the worst description. I don't know, Brett, it's disappointing to keep learning more about what they did wrong, but then also learning more about how little there are prohibitions against any of this stuff baked into the system.
Right, I understand, and I appreciate that our legal system was designed so that the burden of proof is on the prosecutors, right? Because it should be hard to take someone's freedoms away, right? In general, when you prosecute. And for a criminal case, the burden of proof is very high. The standard of making your decision is very, very high. And another disconcerting thing is like, yeah, where is that line where they draw where they're like, now this is a coup? But that's been a theme for people on the right for a very long time. For a very long time, dating back, let's talk voting rights and citizenship. Like originally, they were very explicit. The original census said something like, to count citizenship, you have to be a white, I think, property owning man in good behavior. In order to be a citizen. And then over time, we were like, that's really racist and misogynist. And then over time, the people who wanted to keep the power that they originally outlined were like, all right, we're gonna change the wording. But the spirit still remained the same. We want elitist centralization and protection of this class, right? And it kept going and going. And they just got more and more coded so that they were skirting the letter of the law. And that's happening here. They're trying. They haven't pulled out a hatchet and tried to kill anybody or hack down a judge. But where do we draw the line? And then the other thing that is the theme of that side of the aisle, so to speak, is throw the book at them. Throw the book at them. You know, make an example of these kinds of people. And that only has to do when it's like with marijuana possession. Oh, throw the book at them. Lock them up for a long, long time. Sure. But when it comes to attacking the most sacred element of our democracy, it's like, come on. He didn't take a hatchet to anyone's throat.
Yeah.
It's messed up.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, like, we're only allowed to be bothered by this stuff or do anything about it if it succeeds. In which case it's too late at that point. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. It's precedent too. That's the other thing in the law. Precedent. Oh, we're not gonna go prosecute this kind of thing. Where's your precedent? I guess they'd rather not lose, but and that's the game. The game is them to convince us it wasn't a big deal, and it's our job to remind everyone that it was.
Yeah. And again, like, it just, we've experienced a year of people like Tucker Carlson saying this wasn't a coup, this wasn't an insurrection, focusing exclusively on the riot, which itself was an insurrection. Take it up with the dictionary if you don't like that. And ignoring that they tried to steal it in the Senate. They tried to steal it in the states. They tried to steal it in the courts. But again, he's not going to identify it when he wanted it to succeed. Anyway, we're gonna jump into another aspect of this. Actually, let's go immediately into this video.
Well, President Biden said what I've been saying out loud for several years now. The Democrat Party is the party of stolen election claims.
That is Brad Raffensperger. You might recall that name. He's the Republican former Secretary of State who Trump infamously called and told him to find me 11,780 votes so that he could win Georgia in 2020. And Raffensperger did seemingly the right thing, very low bar. He didn't steal Georgia's state election for Trump. And he got a lot of credit for it. He got a lot of death threats and attacks from the right. And he got a lot of credit from everyone else. And then he was able to process for months the death threats on the one side and the credit on the other. And apparently the fear of the death threats have won out because now he sort of sees the light. Along the way, he tried to cash in. Actually, on almost the exact anniversary of the election last year, he published a book titled Integrity Counts. But now, we are still in the thick of virtually no elected Republicans being willing to admit that Donald Trump lost the election. He is going on Fox to declare that the Democrats don't accept the results of elections. We have a little bit more from Brad Raffensperger. Listen to this.
And when he made that point that the only legitimate election will be if he can pass HR 1, HR 4, so then they can have rampant and legal wide and do away with photo ID. That's the only legitimate election, and that's just going to lead to voter fraud.
So he is now a company man again. He's going to be, well, I mean, they still hate him and he's got a primary challenge, but he is doing what he can to get the back on his side, Brett, by claiming that the Democrats are the ones that are doing what literally every Republican, for the most part, is doing right now and has been since the election.
So here's what to know about Brad Raffensperger, and this is like classic liberal media mistake 101. And this is the move that is now the central premise upon which moderate Democrats are built. There's good Republicans. There's good ones. So when Raffensperger said, Trump, you can't steal the election, that wasn't the end of the sentence. It was dot, dot, dot. It was, you can't steal this election this way. There's tons of ways to steal elections. We've been doing it since the dawn of America. Slowly, they've forced us to acknowledge that everybody who's a citizen in America has the right to vote. But constantly, we're doing all these different gerrymandering initiatives and selective. You know, Jim Crow itself was basically like, we're not going to make it illegal for black people to vote, but what are things black people do and places black people live? Mm-hmm. We'll criminalize all of it, and now they're criminals, and criminals can't vote. That's the loophole in the 13th Amendment or whatever. That's what they did. And this is Raffensperger doing the exact same thing. And in the wake of the attempts for Trump to steal Georgia and Raffensperger's apparent, like, it's cool. It's not okay to do that now. The people on the left were just like, in the moderate left, so to speak, were just like, yeah, it's cool. Thank God we got people like him, and we're gonna appeal to people who voted for people like him. That's not the move. The move is to change filibuster rules, carve out the same exceptions for voting rights acts as you have for budget stuff and debt ceilings, and make the move. And the Supreme Court and federal judges, make the move. Do it now, or this stuff will continue to happen. That is literally the only defense. And I was watching something, and then these people, these like folks who call themselves leftists, who just talk themselves into stupidity, were like, but at the end, this small group of people who will actually make these voting laws are the District of DC federal judgeship. It's better than what we got now. Right now, it's people on the right who have leveraged their way into power through the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow to write laws that keep people that should be voting from voting. And it's a nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. And another aspect of the nightmare that we will close this out on is that you are just going to keep hearing things like Raffensperger from more and more people. We've heard it from Trump before. It's a combination of two things. One, projection, in that they assume in their enemies the things they know to be true about themselves, but also it is damage control. It's the sort of thing that Tucker Carlson spends a lot of his show doing when he, you know, covers January 6th, but only to say that it's not white supremacy, it's not an insurrection. He inspires all of those things, but then has to shield those he's encouraging from acknowledging what they've become, how dangerous, how scary, how threatening that is. And so they know they're being attacked as people who refuse to accept election results, because they know it. They know that they won't accept those election results. So now they have to do the thing where they just lower everyone into the mud. So now everyone gets attacked as not accepting election results. So we're all equally guilty, even though we're not. And to demonstrate that, we had Raffensperger. Now we have a senator who you might recall as you're watching this video what he was up to on January 6th. Watch this.
Democrats don't accept elections that they don't win. I mean, it happened in 2000, it happened in 2004, it happened in 2016. Now it's going to be 2022. I mean, if Joe Biden thought that his party was going to win these elections, then all would be fine. But he thinks, and because the polls suggest, he's going to lose them, his party's going to lose them, the House and the Senate, and therefore they're illegitimate. I mean, it's dangerous, it's wrong, it's ridiculous.
He is very worried about how dangerous and wrong people not accepting election results are. Sorry, you might not have gotten his whole message because he wasn't doing it while doing this in the air. That really sells it. Yes, the Democrats don't accept election results. That's why a year into Trump becoming president, so many of us lefties clustered in a city in Texas waiting for dead celebrities to come back, because we thought that would magically make Hillary Clinton president again. That's an accurate read on history. Final thoughts, Brett?
Final thought is this, like those elections he cited were elections where Democrats got more votes but lost. We have a system where the winner loses. The other one, if he's talking about Stacey Abrams, I did a video on Rebel HQ about Ben Shapiro talking about Stacey Abrams complaining about her vote, her election getting stolen. She ran against the then Secretary of State of Georgia, who purged 300,000 people off the voter rolls thanks to a new law that they passed that were like, if you haven't voted in a time we've deemed to be too long, 3 years, then you're off the voter rolls.
Yeah.
And here's they write unjust, unfair, stupid, anti-American rules. And then when you bring it up, they try to gaslight you into saying, but them's the rules. It's like someone who knows that you're a certain height, building a giant fence around the castle of democracy and being like, well, I got in here. Yeah, you had a ladder, you know the secrets, you did all the things that allow you to get in, and don't let them in. And then you try to gaslight them into thinking they're crazy when they point out the obvious, which is you've rigged the system.
Yeah. And I will finally add just one thing. You're 100% right about a very real, obviously, the 2000 election. People are going to have concerns about the Supreme Court effectively deciding who gets to be president. And then, you know, other thing, the fact that, as Brett points out, the Democrats got more votes. But it's actually one level more ridiculous for Josh Hawley to claim some sort of equivalence there, because you might recall that Gore conceded almost instantly, and Hillary Clinton conceded None of them claimed they were president a year and a half after that. Did they have some followers who were angry? Sure, that will happen in literally every election. There's not been a case, like in 2001, it wasn't a case where every single Democrat that wanted to run in the House and the Senate had to enthusiastically claim that Al Gore was technically president to have any chance of winning. That was not the way that things went down. Anyway, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, an issue we've been focusing on quite a bit here on TDR, potentially a breakthrough on it. We'll reveal what that is and how it's happening after this. Okay, so with that, good news maybe, or at least, I don't know, optimistic news. Take a look.
Should members of Congress and their spouses be banned from trading individual stocks while serving in Congress?
No, I don't know to the second one. Because this is a free market and people, we have a free market economy, they should be able to participate in that.
That was Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, just a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, being asked about individual stock ownership and trading by members of Congress that have secret information and can and have been shown to effectively benefit from that information. We're concerned about it. We think that it's corrupt, and she was incredibly dismissive and condescending and tone deaf in her response. Well, things have moved quickly since then, and she might be moving. But I wanna get into why potentially. There's a few different reasons. We're gonna dissect it. But I just happened to notice that it was only yesterday that former President Donald Trump was asked about Nancy Pelosi and stock ownership, and he had this to say. She has inside information. It's not right. It's not appropriate. It shouldn't be. She doesn't want to discuss that. She wants to discuss other things that shouldn't be discussed. Some of the things that they're proposing now, like impeaching someone for absolutely no reason for a perfect phone call. You look at that. You look at impeachment, both of them, but you get impeached for a phone call that was like perfecto. So many different things. I happen to watch her and see her and dealt with her a lot. And I think she's clever in one way and stone cold crazy. She should not be allowed to do that with the stocks. She should not be allowed to do that. It's not fair to the rest of the country. One of the most deranged quotes I've ever read in my life. He said perfecto. That's a literal quote. And he's talking about impeachment. It's 2022. It's been a year, more than a year since he's been impeached. But Brett, he does criticize the practice of politicians benefiting from their position, which he has always been against.
Listen, you always have to understand, first of all, I love the perfecto, Pierre Perfecto over here. It's so stupid. Like, that is insane. And he calls her stone cold crazy, basically saying she's really good at certain things. That's a carve out for when Nancy Pelosi beats him at something. It's a carve out. I said she's good at some stuff only when I obviously lose. And then she's insane and terrible at other things. But actually, Donald Trump, for a very long time, and a lot of Donald Trump's cronies within his apparatus identify that this is a wildly popular thing to ban individual stock trades among Republican or among politicians. It's easy for Trump to say if he was sophisticated enough in his financial dealings to understand and benefit from this kind of insider information, I'm sure he would do it too. But in the meantime, he's rich in other ways, so to speak. And so he doesn't need anything from that personally. And as a result, he is now free to be objective on the situation and also sniff out, as he's always been good at, what a kind of vaguely populist complainer would say. And I feel like I'm a vaguely populist complainer. A lot of people are vaguely populist complainers because it's like, I don't have time to look through all this. But when I see that, like, all these commercials during the NFL games about managing my stock portfolio that are like wildly geared to the rich people watching there, I have no idea. But then I know that you can be in charge of the government. You can be in charge of the government and do government things that will change the fortunes of major Fortune 500 companies. And then you can go make those deals and have and benefit from it. That is something I will vaguely populously complain about.
That's true. And look, and to that end, the only thing that I will partially disagree with you on is you're saying he can say this, not just because it's popular, which is, I think, why he's saying it. It's an easy, free way to seem anti-corruption, but also because he would not actually push for it if he were in charge again, and he would never abide by any of these sorts of restrictions himself. So I think it's also 100% fake. Like he doesn't mean anything that he says, I don't think. But he's right, accidentally and fakely. He is right and she is wrong. And there's been a lot of pressure coming from her own, like AOC has been talking about this for a couple of years now. Ossoff came out with his bill recently. I think it might have been, was it Mark Meadows a couple of weeks ago that said he'd try to get some Republicans on board? And now you have Trump criticizing it. And so here is what we've got from Nancy Pelosi as of today. She was asked about this by Insider and said, "I've said to the House Administration Committee, review all the bills that are coming in and see which ones, where the support is in her caucus. If members want to do that, I'm okay with that." So that is hardly enthusiastic. She seems to be indicating, whether we think we can trust her or not, that were they to push for it, she wouldn't unilaterally kill it. And I doubt it would ever pass. There's way too many corrupt politicians, but she seems to be potentially willing to accept that change.
No.
And why shouldn't she? She already has $100 million. She's as rich as she ever needs to be. She will not spend that money in 10 lifetimes.
Dude, you know that isn't the motivator. The final destination of money isn't the motivator. It's a personality that creates a machine. They know they're that machine. She knows that she's that machine who needs to have power and make money. And the machine needs to always have a bank account that's going up. That's her identity. And if it isn't doing that, even if it levels out, she feels like she's a broken machine. And whether that's true for Nancy Pelosi specifically or all these jagoffs in Congress, it's still the game and the song remains the same for me. I was trying to think of like how we should formulate how these people get paid. My first initiative was like the America Fund. Have an America Fund that's representative, that has a portfolio that is representative of if things are going well. And you're invested only in that. Now, I know how that'll be turned into corruption. So you could be like, what gets into the America Fund? I'm sure they're going to decide themselves how that happens. So I think we put them on a little, you know, they're always selling us on crap that they're doing a good job, that we should hire them again. They're salesmen. So let's put them on a salesman payment structure. You get a low base salary and the rest is all bonus based on your freaking performance. So dazzle me with making my life better and everybody else's life better. Cause that's why I hired you. That's the sales pitch you gave. So let's put you on a nice little bonus structure and we'll put your salary on layaway.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously it would be complicated and difficult, but effectively the incentives are set up right now that they will get richer the more they stop anything from happening, because virtually anything they could pass might benefit tons of people, improve their quality of life, but would be a threat to the stability and dominant economic position that they and their backers currently hold. Anyway, we'll see. I don't expect a lot of progress on this, but there's been a lot of great, first of all, great reporting from Insider on non-compliance with even the mediocre kitten stock act that we've got right now, and good advocates for actually doing something in this one area of corruption. Got to keep pushing. Maybe someday we can get it. But still a long way. But that's your update. Okay, with that, we have another update for you. Let's jump into this next story. Earlier this week, Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar appeared to have been raided by the FBI. They're not formally using that terminology, but a bunch of FBI agents went into his house and his office, stayed for hours and came out with documents and computers, which based on the TV shows that I've watched seems like a raid. Anyway, we talked about this on the show yesterday and didn't have many details. Now we have a little bit more, although it's still sort of just an appetizer for whatever it is that is actually going on. The FBI said that they had raided his home and campaign office in Texas. This is the description from ABC News. As part of a wide ranging federal probe relating to the former Soviet state of Azerbaijan and several US businessmen. A federal grand jury in Washington is investigating the matter, but it's unclear if Cuellar is a target of the grand jury's probe. And I would really encourage everyone watching to bear in mind that this might not actually be about him specifically, or he could just be a minor player in whatever it is that they're looking So just bear that in mind. Do not expect that, oh no, he's out. He's gonna be pulling out of the race. He's gonna end up behind bars. We have no idea if that's even justified. Until then though, he has been in Congress since 2005. As one of, effectively in a lot of issues, the most conservative Democrats in the House. In recent years, he has served as a co-chair of the Congressional Azerbaijan Caucus and repeatedly met with Azerbaijani officials, including the ambassador of the country as well. So, Brett, I don't know. I mean, we know, you know, there's potentially, obviously, corruption components to this. That could be a part. Oil, considering that it's Azerbaijan, could be a part. I don't know what to think, honestly. What do you think?
This is the most Mad Libby story. Henry Cuellar, give me a representative, Henry Cuellar. Give me a government agency, FBI. Give me a random former Soviet bloc country, Azerbaijan, because of all the J's. Okay, we got a story. What it does, what I'm happy first, and I love Henry Cuellar. I'm a Cuellar Cuello, as in Spanish, it's translated, it's not a Cuellar head, it's a Cuellar neck. I'm a huge Cuellar Cuello. He looks like a slightly overinflated balloon, and and it's surprising every time he talks that he doesn't sound like he just inhaled helium. He to me is just a giant baby man. I don't, you know, it's that much more frustrating. He's basically like he, you know, this is the reboot of Pinocchio, where it's just like a vaguely horrifying puppet that came to life and is now in charge of an entire district. And the best fact about him that makes me love him is he could have chosen to vote with Trump any percentage of the time. Mm-hmm. And he chose to vote with Trump exactly 69% of the time. Nice.
Nice.
I don't know about this. I feel like Henry Cuellar always is a great opportunity to remind me that he's up for primary March 1st, my 40th birthday, in Texas. And Jessica Cisneros is head to head with him and deserves and should win.
Yeah, it was very close last time around. By the way, it was Chuck Todd, I think, that he actually covered the Cuellar thing. I think it was yesterday. It might have been 2 days ago. And he talked a couple times about how Cuellar's facing a really tough primary challenge, really tough. Don't know who, can't say the name, let's just move on. But yes, it is Jessica Cisneros, and she has, since yesterday's TDR, put out a statement saying, "We are aware of the news regarding Congressman Cuellar and the active FBI investigation." How much did they love typing "active FBI investigation" into a press release? "We are closely watching as this develops. In the meantime, we are focused on our campaign to deliver change to South Texas families and will not be making any additional comments at this time. Nor will we be having shady meetings with Azerbaijani businessmen." I added that last part. And by the way, as of this morning, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has endorsed Jessica Cisneros, as she did in the last cycle. And it's not surprising, they're both Justice Democrats, but another little boost for her. And so we have recently interviewed Jessica Cisneros. That is available on the channel on YouTube if you'd like to see, as well as past interviews with her. There's probably going to be even more of a focus on what was already going to be one of the most focused on primary challenges in this go round. So definitely something to keep an eye on. Any other thoughts, Brett?
No, vote for her. I don't like Henry Cuellar.
No, he's the worst. By the way, he's been sort of AWOL. He hasn't voted, I don't think, so far this month. And he did pop up again today to accept some sort of reward for effectively standing with conservatives on topics of reproductive rights. That's cool for a Democratic congressman.
I don't know, Jordan Yule did some good stuff on him last night on Deep Dive, just talking about how reminding everybody that Pelosi stepped up and was like, this is a really good man. Even though he voted with the other guy 69% of the time.
Yeah. Oh, Adrian is reminding me in the YouTube chat, Jessica Cisneros was on, I think, The Conversation yesterday, I believe. So that's also available as well. Anyway, we're gonna go into our second break. We come back, updates on Havana Syndrome, very exciting. And what the hell is going on with Lauren Boebert? We're gonna try to get to the bottom of it after this. Okay, so during that break, we talked a little bit about the fact that very popular, famous singer Meat Loaf was announced to have passed today. Louis Anderson as well, just a couple of hours later, announced to have died as a result of complications from cancer, apparently. So A lot of, you know, I think much beloved celebrities passing over the past couple of weeks. Rough time. Okay, Brett, with that, we have entered into our third block with like a luxurious, expansive amount of time. What is going on in the damage report today? Okay, let's waste it by that and this. Let's talk about the story. Havana syndrome, you've probably heard about it. What is little explained, but the idea is that some shady organization or governments or military or rogue operators or terrorists are targeting American diplomats and soldiers abroad with something. We don't know what, a microwave weapon, Jewish space lasers, I don't know, but something that leaves enough room for you to fill with your imagination. Except that it turns out that, as many people suspected, there's not a lot of evidence for this, it turns out. So the CIA has looked into this and has found that most cases of the mysterious ailments known collectively as Havana syndrome are unlikely to have been caused by Russia or another foreign adversary, a conclusion that has angered victims of it. And we will return to their continued concerns. In about 24 cases, the agency, the CIA, cannot rule out foreign involvement. Sure, they can't rule out gremlins in the trees. You can't rule out anything that you haven't proven or found evidence for. Anyway, they're being stalked in the night by witches. Anyway, but in hundreds of other cases of possible symptoms, the agency has found plausible alternate explanations. So a directed energy weapon remains the hypothesis that a number of victims who have studied the incidents believe is most likely. Some of these current or retired officials believe government investigators have dismissed evidence they have collected of strange sounds or electromagnetic readings. Late last year, officials said the CIA had been unable to find any evidence that a directed energy weapon was responsible, neither intercepting communications from a foreign government that suggested the use of such a device or readings showing the presence of microwaves at the location of an incident. But some victims, as well as others, believe that it's still the most likely explanation. So Brett, thoughts?
When you read the symptoms of Havana syndrome, it is frequently that people were traveling and they had tummy troubles. So, like, oh, I can't believe this person went to Vietnam and had diarrhea. Like, oh, this person was in Mexico and had diarrhea. This person traveled in a plane for 40 hours and has a headache. It's like, yeah, that's what happens when you go to a place with generally a different biome, for lack of a better word, you get icky in the tummy. You're drinking water, you're eating food that you're not used to. It all sounds like they're travelers traveling. And it's so crazy when you think what John Stewart had to do to get payments for the medical consequences experienced by first responders who showed up to dig through the rubble of 9/11, how he had to pull teeth and strain for that kind of funding. And these folks are like, Havana syndrome, give it some cash. You've got to be kidding me. It's such a weird CIA bias, like as if the CIA doesn't swim in funding as it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, a predisposition to believe whatever claim that someone vaguely tied to the military or foreign policy believes is consistent with US policy, but they really did buy into it. As many people have pointed out, Congress actually passed a law to compensate, and as Brett was alluding to compensate victims of Havana syndrome. And giving the government until April to devise a payment plan. Ken Klippenstein actually had a great tweet sort of comparing the fact that they readily passed that, but also readily dropped paid family leave, medical leave from the safety net bill. So let's not gloss over this. The Senate passed something. That is crazy that it happened at all, which means what is bipartisan in America is keeping wages low, lowering taxes, and giving money that supports the idea that America and its agents are being targeted by a bunch of shady governments abroad. And look, I don't rule out the possibility that there's something. Anything is possible. Microwave weapons or sonic weapons or whatever are possible, but you have to have evidence of it. And this is something that is supposedly happening all over the globe as people go abroad. So what is the link there? I don't know. Like, it would be an amazing story. I would be fascinated to see the evidence for it. but it doesn't seem to be there. And it is suspicious how readily many in government and media have been to accept basically evidence-free claims in this area.
It's insane. There's another similar story I think they covered on Indisputable if you didn't, but it was like there's someone in Wisconsin trying to pass a law so that you get reimbursed if you are wrongfully prosecuted for self-defense. All the different stuff that they could put money for. Guy wants to call it the Kyle Law for Kyle Rittenhouse. And like, it's a state legislator throwing stuff at this, but all the things that they're, we need more evidence of whether voting is being suppressed in various states since time immemorial. We need more evidence for that. But the Senate's like, Havana syndrome, just give me a payment structure, just bill me. Havana syndrome. How's it? Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I want microwave technology. I like Dr. Krieger and Archer have advocated for the brown note just as something fun to shoot at people. But I think if we're going to solve any microwave weapon, we need to have, we need to target more the frozen burritos at 7-Eleven that do quite a number on me. And I need them to be that delicious, but leave my colon intact.
And as you said before, dealing with that maybe actually solves this problem internationally. Who knows? There's a lot of potential explanations. The whole thing is just disgusting. And yeah, it's money flies out the door for some things, and then they are so tight-fisted for others.
And what's funny to me is the way that the right wing would look at something like this, and they're like, not today. But any similar thing would be like, look at this. The Democrats are going to vote en masse to throw more funding at the CIA. Mm-hmm. Like this weird Josh Hawley flavor of conservative right now that somehow is outflanking the left on things like that. Just saying, they're going to throw more money at the FBI and the CIA, the CIA, which goes and just gets us into forever wars we can't pay for that go on forever and don't make us any safer. Get the hell out of there. They just haven't decided to use that tactic on this kind of thing. And it's wide open for everyone.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll see. Look, they're saying this is not definitive. They're going to keep looking into it. And I have no doubt that they will. So we'll see what, if anything, comes of this. But that said, we've got one more story to close this out, and I'm very curious to hear Brett's take on this. Let's jump into it. Lauren Boebert is unfortunately back in the news, this time for apparently asking a group of Orthodox Jews at the Capitol if they were conducting reconnaissance. They did not like this. Their host, Representative Tom Suozzi, who was hosting the group there at the Capitol, didn't like this. They were at the Capitol to commemorate the 41st anniversary of the end of the Iran hostage crisis. They've apparently, the group of Orthodox Jews that were there have been backing the representative's plan to recognize the hostages with a congressional gold medal when they unfortunately ran into Lauren Boebert near an elevator. By the way, if you're gonna run into her at the Capitol, don't be near an elevator. The worst things happen there. One witness said that the group, along with other members of Congress, was waiting for that elevator. When the doors opened, Boebert stepped out and looked at the group of visitors from head to toe. Boebert then asked if they were there to conduct reconnaissance. A rabbi who was there says, when I heard that, I actually turned to the person standing next to me and asked, did you just hear that? You know, I'm not sure to be offended or not. I was very confused. And the rabbi added that, I think understandably, people are very sensitive now, especially after what happened in Texas this past weekend when an armed man held four people hostage at a synagogue. So we're gonna have her responses, the representatives. But Brett, what did you make of this when you first saw it?
I thought that Lauren Boebert, like most Republicans, loved Jews, supported Israel, but then to call Israelis essentially terrorists or Jews, assuming they're Israelis, essentially looking for doing reconnaissance for some kind of terrorist plot. Lauren Boebert seems to be one of God knows how many hidden Republicans actually secretly hate Jews and are turning on them. I think if the Republican Party apparatus had any amount of decency, honor, and consistency, they would target Lauren Boebert and on behalf of Israel, oust them from the party and any participation they might have in anything remotely, tangibly close to lawmaking or dollar appropriation. And as Congress has the power of the purse in America, for Israel's sake, they must throw her out of her seat in Congress.
I hear you. I don't think they're going to. We're gonna go through her response, and there's a couple different layers of this. So I, first of all, when I first saw this, thought, like, we know from experience covering the news that the Republican claims to be against anti-Semitism are a cudgel to use on Democrats, and they, you know, pragmatically like having Israel specifically as an ally for foreign policy purposes. They also are, their base is riddled with disgusting anti-Semitism. But that said, I wouldn't imagine that she would, based on anti-Semitism, see a group of Orthodox Jewish individuals and say that. So I assumed, did she see them and think that they were Muslim somehow? Because she's more explicitly Islamophobic than she is anti-Semitic. I know she's hateful in a lot of different ways, but that was my first thought, was, is she getting her isms mixed up?
She is stupid, John. So I can't say with certainty about someone this painfully dumb, really anything. There is no confusing Orthodox Jews with Muslim people, period. You'd have to be pretty stupid. But then again, I just said she's really, really stupid.
Okay, so now let's
be fair. That's insane that you just wouldn't.
Okay, I'm not saying I would. I'm trying to understand an insane story. So
I mean, some are saying shalom, some are saying salam. Those are wildly different words.
Yes. Anyway, when asked about the remark, Boebert said she made it in reference to criticism she has received over giving tours of the Capitol prior to the January 6th attempted insurrection. Quote, I saw a large group and made a joke. Sadly, when Democrats see the same, they demonize my family for a year straight. So she thinks the idea that she was involved with the insurrection is a joke. It's not. So that's your explanation. And it's weird and she's the worst, but I think it makes sense. Except that she then added one more thing, and she says, I'm too short to see anyone's yarmulkes. Well, if the joke was just that a group is being led on a tour of the Capitol, haha, remember when people said I did that? She just said, well, so if you had seen the yarmulkes, you wouldn't have made the joke? What would that have to do with the reference to the January 6th tour? So is it about them being Jewish? Because she gave an explanation that makes it seem as if it's agnostic to any religious thing, but then she added on something that again made it seem as if it was religious. Is she just stupid? Just stupid and folksy?
That's the most David Brent defense. Like, it's an explicitly British office, like, oh, I'm not racist, but I'll make another joke that is just as bad in the wake of it, you know, just to keep it light. She is really dumb. The most compelling thing to me is that people like Lauren Boebert simultaneously love Israel and think they can just, like, they don't like Jews. They just don't like them.
They just don't
like Jews, and that's it. And that's what it came down to. And we do have evidence to say that these guys, the people like Lauren Boebert and her supporters would be the ones we'd more likely be able to go up to and say, are you conducting reconnaissance? Because they're the ones who actually did carry out what would be defined classically as a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
We saw them.
By the way, ideologically, even their love of Israel, like, for the true believers at least, is like apocalyptically self-serving, quite literally. Anyway, that's all the time we have for our first hour, but there is so much more awesome news to look forward to. We've got a roundup of a couple just horrible anti-maskers, some scary stuff, a discussion about M&Ms and how they should be presented to the world, and then we will be throwing away our garbage people of the week and revealing the community garbage person of the week. So you're not going to want to miss any of that. If you're on the linear platforms, thank you for joining us. We will see you next Monday. If you're on Twitch or YouTube, lots more to come, so don't go anywhere. Brett and I are going to take a short break, but we'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.